Welcome back to another episode of the Huxley Morton podcast, the show where each week we speak to pharma company owners and industry leaders sharing their stories of personal and professional growth. We're now on series four of the show, and as you may already be aware, we're on a mission to help clinical researchers from around the world with tips, tricks, and inspiration. So if you could do me a quick favor and please hit that follow or subscribe button, it really does help more than you'll ever know. Once again, Adam Walker is alongside me, so sit back, relax, and we'll take things from here. This week, Adam and I are joined by Cal Patel, CEO and co-founder at Bright Insight. Adam, Cal, how are you both doing?
I'm fantastic. Thanks for having me on the podcast today.
Great to see you, James, and thanks for joining us, Cal. It's great to meet you.
So look, Cal, I guess prior to connecting to you a while back through LinkedIn, I hadn't really come across Bright Insight. But then when you started sharing your story, it was fairly phenomenal. And I was quite miffed by how you've managed to achieve what you have in such a short period of time. But look, for our audience, if you could perhaps give us a quick overview of what Bright Insight is, delivering as a business, just to kick us off so we can set the scene.
Yeah, sure. Happy to do that, James. So we're at Bright Insight, we're basically the leading global platform for biopharma and medtech to build regulated digital health solutions. So we work with leading pharma and medtech companies like Sanofi, Roche, CSL Behring, Novo Nordisk, UCB, and others that are building software as medical device solutions. So they're building regulated apps for their patients. They're building personalized drug dosing algorithms. They're building connected drug delivery devices. Disease management type of solutions. So they're wrapping these solutions typically around their drug product in order to help drive more personalized treatments, improve patient outcomes, support that patient journey. So we're really the leading platform for regulated digital health solutions.
Wow, how about that, Adam? What a load of names to roll off the tongue there. It's an impressive client list that you've amassed, Cal. So you must be very pleased with that. But I guess with that in mind, how did you first get into this space? And, then tell us a little bit more about the actual solutions or, what you're providing to these, high profile clients.
Yeah. About a decade ago or so, I was asked to look into, what is happening in the digital and technology world, and what really is the potential opportunity and impact that can have for the pharma industry. And that work really led to us creating what we called Amgen Digital Health. It was one of the early sort of technology or digital focus groups within big pharma medtech at the time. And what we were, what we really said is, how do we leverage digital and technology to improve the real world performance of our drugs? So we were looking at things like, how do you have, for example, a regulated algorithm that you can take through regulatory, bring to market, and through that identify patients, for example, that are misdiagnosed, underdiagnosed, or undertreated, where we had a leading drug position that can help that patient base, right? So you end up helping the patient, of course, by getting them on the appropriate therapy, but you also help your business by, of course, expanding sales, right? So we're doing things like that. Or we were looking at how do you drive personalized adherence, right? Because there's a lot of generic adherence solutions that have good, but ultimately limited impact. How do you really take an approach to personalizing at a specific patient level, how to drive more adherence? And again, for any leading drug, for pretty much every drug, adherence is a major problem. And if you can improve adherence, of course, you're going to drive better clinical outcomes again, but you're also going to help the commercial performance of your therapy. So we started doing that kind of innovation. And what we learned was when you want to leverage the cloud, right, when you want to get that data off the patient or the device, to the cloud, and then have turn that data into insight and then get that insight back to the patient or the device or the caregiver or the provider, that infrastructure, it's actually not just a technology challenge, but more importantly, it's a challenge around privacy, around security, but also regulatory and quality. And that infrastructure and really all that software is has to operate under a quality management system, just like your drug product or your physical device product has to, right? And so through our experience, we learned really the hard way both the importance of, but also the complexity of delivering that. And we said, you know, this is the future of where healthcare and pharma and medtech is going. Let us solve that problem at scale, so folks can focus on the innovation, you know, on their patient, on the data, on the insight, and not get slowed down and really, you know, stopped by the complexity of leveraging the cloud in a regulated way.
Wow.
excuse me, Cal. It's fascinating as you describe that. I actually, some time ago, used to work for Novo Nordisk, and I worked on a patient app developing algorithms around continuous glucose monitoring. So this really resonates with me. I'm just genuinely surprised. I've never come across Bright Insight. Why do you think that might be? Because this is absolutely the space in which I work, and I have done for many, many years. And I know many of the competitors in this space. I'm just curious, with regards to that kind of marketing piece, perhaps the visibility. I don't know. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah. We're a company that's been around for about 4 years. So I think part of it maybe is a time orientation. Yeah. But I would say, you know, we have a really strong and growing presence and brand with, you know, our pharma and now more so here with the medical device companies as well. And I think the you know, part of it may be that we are the first ones to really take a regulated platform approach. Right. I think the alternative before Bright Insight was to work with, let's say, systems integrator, software development partner, and to try to kind of homebrew or homegrow between, you know, right. And so less about a platform that I can use. It was more around how do I build my own thing from scratch in partnership with you know, a software development house. And so I think that was part of it, is that there really wasn't a big or sort of, you know, obvious solution to how to do this, and you had to do it yourself. And I think the other part I would say is this is still a, you know, this is early days of what the future is, right? And so, you know, again, when I was at Amgen a decade ago, not too many people were talking about digital, right? And if they were, they were mostly talking about buying, you know, ads on Google or YouTube or you know, and so this is much different. We're in this journey where, you know, maybe I'll sort of describe as a comparison. Again, the year I started at Amgen about 12 or so, 13 years ago, that was the first year where we also hired our first head of a device group, which is kind of surprising because Amgen's a leading, you know, one of the original biotech companies. All but one of our drugs went into a physical device, right? Yet oftentimes you sort of focused on the drug innovation and then try to figure out, oh, what's the formulation? You know, is it going to go on a wearable or an on-body injector? How many injections a day or what, you know, all that kind of stuff, right? Now, every major biopharma company has a device group, even though they don't typically make their own devices, except for a few exceptions, they have their own device group because they appreciate the product is not just the drug, it's the drug plus the whole device, right? That is the definition of your product. We see the exact same thing happening in digital. We're going to look back a decade from now and realize that your product is not just your drug and the physical device. Your product actually is the drug plus the physical device and the relevant digital wrap around it, right? And so I see a world where someone's going to come up with a new drug innovation early in the research process, and there's going to be somebody sitting at that table who's the digital expert who's going to say, this is fantastic drug innovation. Do we need a personalized drug dosing algorithm, or will it be one size dose for all? Do you think adherence is going to be a problem? If so, you know, do we need to, you know, how do we drive personalized adherence? Is it going to be obvious to identify which patients will respond and not respond? Oh, if that's going to be a challenge, how do we use digital to help, right? So it's the same way where, you know, you have a device expert sitting at the table right at the early days of drug innovation, you're going to have the same thing happen in digital. And just like that took a decade on the physical device side, it'll take a decade on the drug side, I mean, on the digital side. But that's the journey we're on, right? And so we're still early days in that journey. And that's why I see, you know, us, Bright Insight, really being positioned as that de facto platform to enable this, you know, evolution or revolution.
I mean, it's happening now. It's absolutely, as you say, I think the timing, the 4 year window is absolutely speaking to that point. But also, you know, if you think about just in the UK alone, the MHRA yellow card system, you have to report your serious adverse events as much as your serious device adverse events. So the two go concurrently, and there are, you know, equivalent nomenclature around outcomes that are reported both for devices as much as there are for the drugs. So exactly as you're describing, I mean, you're in that sweet spot, and it definitely is the time now, because, you know, as we were talking about insulin pumps and those types of things, medical devices are not just prosthetic legs. Medical right. devices could be electronic patient beds, even. You know, everything is a medical device and has to be considered to be such.
Yeah, it's a great point. You know, a lot of folks, that we end up interacting with, you know, oftentimes don't appreciate that point. You know, they're yeah. thinking, oh, it's software. We know how to do software. It's like, but software as a medical device is a completely different set of requirements and expectations, right? And to your point, you get to market, you just like you do pharmacovigilance on a drug, you have to do, to your point, device vigilance on software, right? You have to be tracking, is it performing?
It's much more complex. It's much more complex in the device, because there isn't a set of nomenclature and coded terms for the things that you're going to be experiencing right now. It doesn't exist. It's still being built, isn't it? You know, the Medra terms don't cover everything that happens to a medical device right now. Many of those things are, you know, narrative and led by anecdotal evidence, aren't they?
That's right. I think, you know, sometimes people ask, you know, what's, you know, think about like our competitive advantage, and there's many that we can point to, and there's certainly a scale competitive advantage. But I would say the most important sort of one of the most important values we bring to our customers and our advantages is the experience curve, right? We're just, to your point, working with all these different companies. I think we recently looked at what's the sales or peak sales of all the drugs that we're already working on. It's over, you know, somewhere in the ballpark of $30 to $40 billion, right? So we're working on a nice portfolio of drugs to help support their, you know, software as medical device solutions. And so you just think about the experience we bring in what's a relatively nascent space. Yeah. That's all, you know, we've made a lot of mistakes, right? We've had a lot of learnings. We incorporate that into, you know, both our platform and the solutions we have on top of that, but also obviously how we engage and support our customers more broadly.
It all sounds pretty incredible in terms of how you're putting this together and how you're probably challenging that adherence piece. Because I think that with anything like this, whether it's physical, digital or not, that it's that uptake and getting people to change the way that they do things. But look, before we can perhaps come on to that, and you touched on it a few times as to, you know, that you are, I guess, almost trying to replace that need for lengthy build from scratch solutions with what you're doing. But, you know, I can see the branding in the background there. I'm just thinking, where did this business idea come from? Where did the name come from? I'm always interested to know, you know, where company names have come from and how it started. So, you know, 4 years back, what did things look like? Where, you know, how did the birth of Bright Insight come about? What did it look like?
Yeah. So it goes back to that Amgen experience. Both my co-founders come from there as well. One runs the data side of the business and one is our CTO and product side. And what we learned the hard way when we were trying to do this innovation was, you know, that there's, it's not just enough to build capability around kind of just digital from a patient and data and insight perspective and behavior change perspective, to your point, but you've got to fundamentally have the right infrastructure in order to do this. And that infrastructure did not exist, right? And so we, the hard way, did it ourselves, you know, in our Amgen experience. And we said, this is, in order to really enable this to be successful, right? If you think about from a pharma and medical device perspective, right? To have the kind of talent to do this and the required expertise there, right? To be able to retain that talent, to get scale at the level of an individual company, right? Versus, right? If you think about like a clinical research organization, why are they so successful? Because they bring a level of scale that an individual pharma company just isn't gonna be able to attain, even if they have a huge R&D budget and are running lots of trials, right? So, you know, it really originated from that experience. And you know, to your point around the name, you know, we've played around with various names, but fundamentally, you know, what we think we're really enabling is insight that's never existed before, right? So again, we all know that the amount of medical data collected about us is actually quite limited because most folks are only spending, luckily, a little bit of time, you know, in their doctor's office or in a clinic or, mm-hmm. you know, if they have to in a hospital or other clinical setting like that. And that is, you know, that's the only time real data is getting collected by you, and it's limited. You know, we envision this world where, you know, you have data being collected as appropriate, you know, during your normal life, you know, as you're on therapy, et cetera, and turning that data into insight, that's really what we're enabling here. And so we're wanting to really capture that notion of insight. And look, the bright part comes is we're real optimists about the future, both from a, certainly from a health perspective. And we think we're in the early days of really enabling digital to have a massive impact on all of our health. And so, you know, we see a bright future. And so that sort of, you know, playing on those words really led to the name, name Bright Insight.
Impressive. And I know that, I think one of the things that really stood out when I first connected with yourself was the scale that you've achieved already. You know, if you were to, you know, when it was kind of day one, was it just yourself and the two co-founders, or did you have a surrounding team, people that you brought over, you know, immediately, or how did it look on kind of, yeah, those very first days in the office, or not from the office as it may have been?
Yeah, it was in the office. Look, it was me and my co-founders. You know, we actually incubated this company in a hardware device company. Yeah. And so we pretty, you know, early on, we were essentially saying, what are big problems that we could solve with digital and technology, you know, in for the pharma and med tech industry? And we played around with a couple ideas, but we pretty quickly honed in on what's, you know, on what's now Bright Insight. And, you know, then, you know, the key was to take the, you know, the depth of expertise we brought, which was, you know, a long time within pharma and the medical device space. As I mentioned, one of my co-founders just has done regulated software for, you know, several decades, for companies like GE and Baxter and Walgreens and at Amgen. Another one had been in data in healthcare his entire career and had done multiple startups. So when we kind of put all that experience together, we had a lot of what it took, but we recognized, of course, we needed other core capabilities, right, around things like security and cybersecurity as an example, in places like, you know, go to market, right, really thinking about how do you effectively communicate and sell and support the product, right, maintenance and support, you know, et cetera, right. So we brought on a core group of folks. But yeah, a couple of years ago, you know, we were about, when we did our Series A financing, which I think we're approaching about 3 years, I think we were about 30-ish people. I don't remember exactly the number.
Yeah.
And, you know, and we're now, you know, we've done 3 rounds of financing. We're, you know, now, you know, well north of 200 folks and wow, spread out across the US, Europe, India, you know, and other markets. So we've been scaling.
What's been the biggest difference in that? Because look, a 30 man business is a lot different from a 200 plus business. Was there any points where you found it stalled? Because I've spoken to some business owners that they kind of get to that 50 mark and then they just seem to, the retention becomes a little bit more difficult. Everything just becomes, you know, there's more layers that maybe need to be in place. You know, what challenges did you face along the way? If you were to talk us through those steps, how did it go from 30 to 200? Because I guess, I mean, it perhaps feels like, you know, you're looking back on it now, it's happened overnight, but I'm sure it certainly didn't at the time, right?
Yeah, no, definitely. And then look, lots of challenges, lots of things that I think we did reasonably well, and lots of things that, you know, in retrospect, we would have done differently, right? And keep in mind, you know, we doubled the company, more than doubled the company after COVID hit, right? So there's also that's a whole notion of you know, that lots of companies have navigated, of course, of hiring and scaling talent. So you know, I'd point to a few things. Like the first is we're already operating in a really complex, you know, interdisciplinary space, right? So we always had to really know what the left hand was doing and what the right hand was doing, because at the end of the day, we're regulated. We're working on incredibly sensitive data. Also from a privacy and security perspective, we're working for massive companies with huge brands that they're entrusting with us and, you know, to be able to, you know, support their drug products. So, you know, we always had this real orientation from a culture's perspective around our values. And so it was really important as we scaled to constantly be talking about and maintaining, and most importantly, behaving to those. And I think that
What would you say that those are, Cal? Because we speak about this a lot, don't we, Adam? It's about those values pretty much coming from the top down. So yourself and your co-founders. And look, as a recruiter, that's normally where I look to decide, do I want to work with this company? Could I hand on heart go and speak to my network and say, look, this is a great place to work? You know, it tends to get judged from that level. So, you know, what are the kind of your pillars or you know, values that you try and implement across the business that has allowed you to you know, build the way that you have?
I'll say there's a couple of, you know, table stakes ones, and then there are the ones that we think really make us who we are, right? And so I think the table stakes ones go into things like trust and integrity, respect, and in particular things around, like, look, we're, again, we have to be incredibly compliant, right? We are not the Silicon Valley, you know, move fast, break things type of approach, right? What we need to do is obviously bring the power of modern technology. And then I sort of say our secret sauce is to operate at the speed and scale and effectiveness and efficiency of modern technology in a, you know, truly agile way, but in a completely compliant way, right? And so, you know, we can't be cutting corners there. Again, when you think about, you know, fundamentally, why do we exist and who do we serve? We don't want to be cutting any corners that are going to put, you know, patient safety at risk or any of our customers and their reputations at risk, right? So there's a table stakes set of things. And then I think people who are, and those are, you know, again, very non-negotiable. And then I think folks that really, I think, are attracted here and you know, really feel like they're doing their life's best work and here, I think I would sort of point to three things. You know, one is around passion, right? What we're doing has never been done before. It's extremely hard. And so you have to be really passionate about our mission to serve patients, right? How do we really bring the power of digital to improve clinical outcomes? Mm-hmm. So you got to want to do that, you know, number one. And the other side of passion is you got to be passionate about your trade, right? So we have so many different types of jobs within these few hundred folks. And so whether you're in DevOps or you're in sales, you want to be the best at what you do, right? So passion is incredibly important. Otherwise, it's just too hard and there's easier places to go make a living. You know, the second is accountability. So what we want to ensure is we have this culture of, I'm not just doing my job, I've like checked the box, but instead you're looking at what's the problem we're solving, you know, for our customer. And you're bringing that orientation regardless of what your job title or rank or any of that stuff is, right? You're like, okay, did we solve a customer's problem? And if not, well, then stay focused and stay accountable to solving that customer's problem, right? And the end problem for the patient or the provider or the caregiver. So really having that sort of notion of accountability in you know, how you get stuff done and ensuring
that's really such a big one in the modern world, because I don't know about sort of you gents, but anytime you go online or you need to sort something out, you normally get an automated chatbot at times and it can't do anything. And when you need to actually speak to a person, is just it gets infuriating. But if you've got people that are accountable and say, you know what, it's not necessarily my department, but I'll walk you through, I'll introduce you to the next person and just carry it through. And I think if every person in a business does that, that's what you want. It's that kind of, I know that you're a, you know, kind of a med tech digital focused business, but if you've got individuals who are taking accountability, that is what's really that perhaps kind of, as you've said, that special sauce behind the scenes that is allowing you or has allowed you to do what you've done today and perhaps will continue to allow you to grow in at the rate that you have.
No, thanks. I totally agree with that comment. That's certainly been our experience. And then just to close out, the third one is around team first, which is, again, this notion of we're not going to be successful against our mission or successful as a company if we, you know, aren't putting the team above the individual, right? And so we have this, you know, notion of there's no such thing as a person wins or, you know, their department wins, right? Because again, we're ultimately delivering for our customers or we're not. And that's just incredibly interdisciplinary, you know, interdisciplinary, right? So we want to challenge each other and push each other, but not be competitive with each other, if that makes sense, right? So it's very much a team first orientation.
Sure. No, as I say, look, I could have done with some of that attitude with some of the tech issues that I've had over the past couple of weeks. But look, I guess it sounds as though things have been going particularly well. You know, what would you, I guess on one hand, look, probably a double question here. You know, what would you list as probably your biggest achievement that you've made as either personally or as a business throughout the journey so far? But also, what has been most challenging about that?
Yeah. Look, when we started this company, we knew that we were in the super early days of this, you know, digital, you know, revolution for pharma and med tech. And so, you know, you're getting into a long slog. And so I would say what I'm extremely proud of is the resilience that we've had as a company and really as a team and as individuals, because I don't think I could have really imagined the amount of resilience that it takes to push forward. Mm-hmm. But that also has been the rewarding part, I think, certainly for myself. I didn't know I had it in me to have that kind of resilience, you know, day in, day out. Not just, you know, we're talking about a lot of the progress, but obviously, it goes without saying that, day to day, week to week, hour to hour, whatever metric you want to use, you know, it's a ton of hard work, right? And so we try to pause and recognize the progress we're making and pause to celebrate the progress. But at the same time, you know, we're working extremely hard and there's setbacks, you know, all the time, right? And it's just what the setback is or what the challenge is maybe different as the company has scaled, or it's different, you know, in a particular situation, but there's constant challenges that we're navigating. So I think that resilience piece is really key to our success. Something I think that we're all incredibly proud of, and one that, you know, we know we're still in the early days of, right? Because I think we're far from done as an industry, and certainly, you know, we're far from done in terms of our mission and how far along we've come to deliver against it.
Cal, you make some great points there. I mean, sometimes leaders and CEOs often say it's a lonely place. So the way that you're describing the manner in which you build teams and you say team first, you know, it really speaks to the point that it sounds like you really value having quality people around you on that journey, because ultimately it's a long journey, isn't it? And it can be very lonely, as I say, as that leader. And you need people along for the ride, don't you, who are invested and speak to those same values and principles that you're clearly very passionate about yourself. Is that a fair comment?
It's an incredibly fair comment. It can be very, very lonely. You know, maybe I'll just add from my perspective, right? So one is, I think it's really important to make sure you align yourself with the right investors and the right board members that are aligned on your long-term, on your what your vision is as a founder, as a CEO, because then, you know, through the progress, but also all the tough times, you're very aligned on where you're trying to get to, right? And so we've been really fortunate to have an incredible set of not just investors, but individuals who are, you know, around the table helping drive the long-term trajectory of the business. The second area I would say is, you know, similarly from an advisor perspective, you know, brought in a lot of people who really care about our mission and are personally, you know, invested to make us successful as a company, but support me as a leader, regardless of what that topic is, regardless of the time, regardless of the day, you know, et cetera. And I've certainly have relied on that. And then I would say directly as a team, I've invested a lot to really ensure we have the right, you know, what we call the executive leadership team for the company at the right phases, and then ensuring that we really operate as a team. So as an example, last year, you know, we really moved our leadership team and expanded our capabilities from what I would kind of say startup to scale up. And so we, you know, brought on 4 new leaders, engineering, sales, finance and operations, and then, you know, our services and delivery side. And so folks who've kind of been there, done that, and they bring just a wealth of experience that we didn't have in the company, right? And so it's being able to recognize that we need that, not have an ego for anybody who's already in the company around, hey, well, you know, why is somebody else coming in to own or drive something? But importantly, we invested a lot in building a lot of trust and vulnerability and accountability with each other. And, you know, both brought in outside firm to support us in our team building journey, if you will. But then, you know, I continually will do, we recently had an ELT meeting. We all flew in together here in the Bay Area. And we took a full half day, even though we don't get to spend a lot of time face to face, took a full half day purely on us spending time giving each other, you know, both the constructive feedback, but also the, you know, the development feedback, right? And I can go into the specifics of how we did it, but the point is we invest a lot of time at the leadership level to be like, we're the first team, right? Like to take a very team first orientation, not an individual orientation.
And
right?
And that's the thing that's filtering down from the top that I think you've spoken to, James, isn't it? And you're absolutely, you know, nailing that. It really sounds like you're nailing it, Cal.
Cal, I'm interested to know where that kind of where that mentality has come from. Because I think one of the things that you said a few minutes back was you almost realized that you're perhaps more resilient than you gave yourself credit for. But this team feeling just keeps coming through and through. I'm just wondering if there's, I guess, any mentors that you looked up to in your earlier life, younger life, whether it is family, brothers, sisters, whether there was something there that has, you know, kind of driven you towards this and also perhaps built that resilience as well.
Yeah. Look, so for sure, lots of, you know, people looked up to mentors over the years, you know, as I've gone through different roles and phases of my life. And I'm certainly one to believe in, you know, standing on the giant, you know, standing on the shoulders of giants sort of statement, right? So I'm constantly curious. And so I'm learning from everybody I meet. I read a lot and try to think about the applications of that to, you know, myself as an individual person, but also what we're trying to do here at Bright Insight. And look, my, just again, personal experience, my, you know, learning from people who have built successful companies, as well as reading, kind of constantly point to that. Ultimately, I think companies, businesses, teams, right, succeed or fail because of the team, and how the team orients, or, you know, works together or doesn't work together. And I've sort of again researched it, right, and the data sort of continuously points to that, right. And there's point to somebody that probably many people know. I'm sure Patrick Lencioni, who's done a lot of research around dysfunctions of a team. He's also written a book called The Advantage. I read that, reread it. I sent it to the entire leadership team to give it a couple of reads over, you know, sort of the in the US, the Thanksgiving, and then going into the, you know, the Christmas, New Year's holidays and stuff. And then we actually brought in his consulting firm to really kick off this year, right? Because we had, as I mentioned, hired four new leadership folks, and we really wanted to come together as a team. And we implemented, you know, that. And I think, look, I think the reality is, as coming back to one of your earlier questions, is as you scale the number of people and geographies and time zones and everything, where stuff falls apart is on the communication side. People don't know, don't have a clear orientation of where you're trying to go. And if everybody in the company doesn't know where you're trying to go, then naturally when it's hard for them to have ownership and make good decisions, because they might be pointed, even if you're pointed kind of 5% in the wrong direction, you multiply that by a couple hundred people, all of a sudden you're creating a lot of wasted energy, right? And if you think about it as an individual in the company, no matter what role you have, people don't come to me and complain that they're working too hard. Their complaint will be, you know, implicitly is that they're getting frustrated because their effort isn't in the right places and it's not yielding the impact and the results, right? And if you think about our own lives, right, most of us don't mind working really hard, but it's really frustrating when that effort doesn't yield, you know, it was wasted because you didn't have the right context or the right orientation or the right information, right? And so that's a big challenge, right? And I think we do a good job at Bright Insight on that first team at the ELT level. I think we still have room for improvement, frankly, to make sure that flows through the organization. Maybe we do it. I hope we do it better than most companies and startups, but I think we certainly can do a better job of investing and really ensuring that everybody in the company really has the clarity they need to drive their individual, you know, day-to-day activity and work effort and how they interact with others on the, you know, internally and externally to be able to do that. And I think if we can get that right, I think that's the biggest unlock to us being successful, right? It's at the end of the day, yes, of course you have to make good strategic decisions and hire good people and all that type of stuff, but it all sort of feeds on itself, right?
I don't know where I heard it the other day, but it was, you know, it's kind of in line with what you're saying here, is nail that vision so that everyone knows what they're doing. Otherwise, people will often spend a massive amount of time doing very diligently what doesn't even need to be done at all. And then sooner or later, they're going to pick up on that and think, oh shit, why am I doing this? that's where the frustration comes in. That's where, you know, exactly. retention goes through, you know, just off the rails. So I love all of that, Cal. And look, what are the what are the plans? What's next for you folks then? Is it going to be continue to rinse and repeat and take on more locations, or is there going to be a slightly different direction or focus? Or what's, you know, if you were to map out, say, the next 18 months, how's it going to look for you folks? More scaling?
Look, our, you know, to your point around having that clearer vision, by the way, I will say you have to have the clarity, but you got, it's a full-time everyday continuous job around and driving that clarity, right? Because you know, we're working in a dynamic space. And so you constantly have to invest in the clarity and the communication piece. And it's a job that's never done for anybody in the company at any level. But to your point around the future, like, look, I think we've made a tremendous amount of progress really establishing ourselves as the leading, digital health platform for regulated software solutions, you know, for pharma and med tech. But we really want to become that de facto, you know, as the industry continues to go down this way. Right. And so we really want to achieve, not just, some of the great logos that I mentioned, but really help expand within all of those customers, right? So as they digitize more and more of their portfolio, they're really, you know, the Bright Insight is that de facto. And then of course, you know, go across the rest of the pharma and medical device industry. And, you know, we have plenty of work there to be done, both again, at an industry level, but also as a company level. And what I'm looking forward to is really being able to not just celebrate and talk about customers, which again is always will be immensely important, but really start talking about, you know, at scale, okay, what are the number of diseases that we have, our customers have solution out in? You know, how many countries do our customers have solutions out in? How many, not just tens of thousands, but hundreds of thousands, but millions of patients are using solutions that are operating on the Bright Insight platform, right? And I think we're right, I think, at that point of transition where those kinds of metrics that are really gaining steam will become quite powerful, right? So it's not just here's logos and here's the billions of dollars of drugs that are building solutions, but really at the end of the day, here are diseases and number of end patients, customers, you know, their customer, our customers' customers are really having their clinical outcomes, in a measurable way be improved. So that's the future I'm excited about.
Bloody hell, Cal. I'm sitting here smiling because I'm just thinking, look, there's still plenty of ambitions left in that tank of yours, isn't there?
It's early days for us, for sure. Because, I don't want to, we didn't talk too much about my background, but just, I've never taken an engineering class in my life, right? So here I am running, co-founder or CEO of a software company, and I can't, I can barely try to keep up with my kids doing Scratch Junior, right? So the question is, why am I, how did I get into what I'm doing in that sense, right? And again, as I go back to my Amgen days, when I looked at what digital and technology could do, to me personally, it was so obvious that the digital revolution that has changed and continues to change basically almost every aspect of our lives had at that point, largely skipped over, in my humble opinion, healthcare, education, and government, right? And so to see that impact in healthcare, it's massive, right? And obviously COVID has really shown a light on what can digital do for healthcare broadly speaking, right? But we're in the early days of that, right? And so, that I think speaks to for healthcare, overall, but certainly, for what we're, at Bright Insight doing with pharma and med tech companies, we're in the early days, right? I see a world where every product is going to be digitized. That's what the next decade I think really holds. And the benefit is ultimately all of us, right? And our families and our friends that, in one way or another, we're all, affected by illness and how therapies, help support us.
I'm just curious, Cal, when you're talking about, the broader impacts and technological advancements, what's your thoughts around electronic health records more generally, whether in the States or globally? Because to me, that also seems to be low-hanging fruit that we can sort out very quickly using the right kind of technologies, AIs, machine learning type activities. I don't know, you must come across that all the time, because ultimately, your patient pools are coming from electronic health records, and this is all real-world evidence, isn't it?
Yes. It's a great question. A couple of things. First, I'll say when you're designing and developing the kinds of solutions we're working on with our customers, if it's directly interfacing with the physician or you need a provider physician to think, you got to think about that from the get-go, right? And a lot of times we see people innovating and just thinking that physicians are going to come out of their normal, complex, busy, crazy life and the workflow that, to your point, is dictated by that EHR, EMR, and engage with your digital solution. It's just not going to happen, right? And so, you know, you have to think about that, right? And so for us, like, you know, we recently launched what we call our disease management solution, and there's the patient app side, but there's also the provider-patient interface, and whether that's you're communicating, you know, via, you know, within the app itself or through a portal, EMR integration, but you really have to think about for your specific solution, how are you going to, if you need to engage the provider, how are you going to do that? And it might be at the level of the EHR, EMR, you know, to your point. So it's critically important, right? Just if it requires a provider to engage, you got to think about the workflow, and all, you know, usually that workflow gets dictated by that EMR, EHR. Look, so first I'll say the obvious, which is it's a shame how that whole industry has evolved. So it's great the government's incentivized that and drove it, but certainly in the United States, it was done in a way where it just led to incredible fragmentation and silos. And right. So even when, you know, the same EMR company is providing two health systems with a solution, there's no turnkey way to unlock that data, right? And the good news is a lot of companies are working on that, right? Including big tech giants as well. And so progress is being made, but a lot more work to be done. And that's going to be, you know, a major sort of unlock of accelerating innovation and really enabling sort of personalized interventions. With that said, like, we genuinely believe that we have to be successful at Bright Insight. Otherwise, I think the alternative version we see is that pharma and med tech companies will build their own, you know, siloed solutions, and ultimately will digitize all of pharma and medical devices, and nothing will talk to each other. And we'll end up with the same EHR problem we have today, a decade from now, where we'll be like, look, isn't this great? We're getting data from every single person when they're not in the hospital, but yet none of the data talks to each other because everyone's built their own silo, right? So we fundamentally see it as like, you know, we have to be successful to ensure that there's common infrastructure, common de facto platform on top of which all of these, you know, all of this data is running. And then you really unlock the value, right, for the patient, for the caregiver, for the provider, for ultimately, you know, the pharma and medical device companies to deliver, you know, the best outcomes and the best experience.
I'm delighted you said that, Cal, because I was hoping that would be your answer. And I'm sure our listeners will be very happy that that's what you said as well, because from the way in the manner in which you describe Bright Insight and how it will hopefully play out for you guys, that's an essential component that I just felt needed to be connected. You know, the dots need to be connected around that. And clearly, you know, you're a very smart guy. You've done a lot of thinking around this, and it comes across in the manner in which you describe it as well. So
particularly, you know, for someone who openly says, look, this was not my background, Cal, you know, it's just, yeah, incredible. I almost feel like it's great to have people on our side as a collaborative, you know, in terms 100%. Of humans. It's great to have people like yourself on board and kind of fighting that fight. So it will be great tuning in and seeing how things develop for you guys. As I said, I hadn't really, like Adam, I hadn't heard too much about the business previously, but now I will be checking in regularly to see what's going on news feeds, etc. But before we let you jump off, look, we always like to close up the show with a quick fire questions round, really, just to get a few more snippets of wisdom, really, from yourself and about you as a person. So look, I'll kick us off here with one question I always ask to like, which is, you know, it seems that you have fallen into this space, but what would you say is the one piece of advice that you would give to your younger self, looking back?
Good question. I would say to be really focused on being present. And what I mean by that is I think a lot of us, certainly I still can, you know, do this, but I, you know, work consciously work against it, which is you can spend your whole time kind of regretting the past or worrying about the future. And if you go through your whole life that way, then have you actually ever lived? Like, because you're literally like never in the moment, right? Because you're just like, oh, I should have done that, I could have done that, or like I need to go do that, right? And of course you have to learn from the past and you have to do some planning for the future, but I think you should spend most of your time, and I wish I had done it earlier in my life, just actually living in the now, right? And so, you know, whether I'm with my kids and my wife and my friends, or I'm working, I'm trying to really be like, this is life right here, right now. And I'm working, you know, I'm doing something that I'm doing exactly what I want to be doing in that moment, and being really present there, because then you're actually living. And so I think, you know, those of us, I'm sure your listeners here are very much oriented. We can all be kind of type A personalities where you're, you know, we're curious, we want to have impact, we're ambitious. But how do you do that when you're actually at the same time being present? It took me many decades to figure that out.
I like it.
It's a wonderful answer, and something that I think we can all work on. You know, we can all be present and aware of that. So you mentioned a couple of books, but is there one particular book or resource that you would recommend our audience to have a read or a listen to?
Yeah. So I'll throw out one that maybe maybe hasn't come up for most folks. And I, you know, last summer read a book called Scarcity. And it's, you know, I studied economics in college, and this is a pretty new take on some fundamental concepts of economics. But what essentially the book shares is whatever you is how when you have a scarcity of something, the kind of impact that it has on your decision making, and it's quite profound. And whether you're talking about scarcity as in somebody, you know, coming from a position of poverty, or you're talking about scarcity, where again, probably for the three of us and our listeners, which is really for us, we're probably privileged enough to you know, have food on the table and shelter and everything, but we probably have scarcity around time, many folks like us, and how does that scarcity of time actually create this really negative loop in your life and in all the actions you're taking and so forth. So anyway, I found it like really interesting, shared perspective that even as somebody who's read lots about economics, I'd never really thought of and appreciated, and has, I think, some really practical things you can implement in your personal and professional life.
I like it. I always like to make a note of these things. I've got a long list of books I'm trying to work my way through now from guests. And look, Cal, we spoke about it earlier. I think you kind of covered it when we were talking about those values and pillars within A Bright Insight. But if you were to nail down just three qualities of the individuals that you value most when building your teams, because there's quite a big team that you've already built, but what would you say they were, you know, just three?
Yeah. Come back to those same three. You got to be passionate about what you're doing as in your job and what we're doing as a company. You have to have this sense of accountability, right? Mm-hmm. It's the job is not done because you check the box on your job description, but it's, you know, do we reach the ultimate goal of whatever that project was or program was? And then three, you got to really think about, you know, we got to succeed as a team, and that's the mindset you're bringing. You're not, you know, you're kind of checking your ego and everything at the door.
It had to be, didn't it, Cal? I knew that was going to be the case after hearing it earlier. I was like, could have done away with that question. Anyway, Adam, over to you, my man.
I'm going to ask the question, but I must just reference a book called Legacy by James Carr. I don't know whether you've come across it, but it speaks to the team values of the All Blacks, the rugby team. And many of the principles that you talked about today, Cal, I think are resonating in that same book. So I would recommend you have a listen to the audio book or have a look at that one. It's called Legacy. So my question, outside of work, you've mentioned family. Is there anything else particularly that you think our audience would be interested to know that you're interested in?
Oh, tons. Well, so three kids, tons of time with kids and family and we love to bike. We love to hike. We love in the winter to be on the mountain skiing and snowboarding. So those are things. And I would say for when we're getting some kid free time, my wife and I love great food and great wine. So we try to get up to wine country here in California at least every month or two and at least get out for great meals on a weekly basis. So those types of things, all oriented around, you know, friends and family.
Like it. Share those values, Adam. That's a bit of us.
100% again.
And look, to wrap us up, Cal, I guess, look, finally, what would you say is your number one golden rule for both life and business? If you were to, just pin it down to one.
Look, you got to pursue your curiosity, your passion, right? Like life is too short. It's a blink, you know, the grand scheme of things, right? Like everything's a blink of an eye. like, don't spend time doing something that you're not passionate about, that's not important to you. So, you know, if you do that, then, you know, I think that just unlocks a life well lived.
Amazing stuff. Well, look, Cal, it's been a pleasure hearing some of the gems that you've shared with us today. Just seem like a very nice, down-to-earth guy, likes, you know, to spend time with the family, but also building an incredible business. There's clearly a lot of ambition still there. I'm definitely keen to see where it all goes. But look, for anyone that is looking to find out more about Bright Insight, reach out to you and the team. What is the best way to learn more effectively?
Yeah. No, for sure. Go to our website. That's the easiest place to start, you know, brightinsight.com. Look, I'd love to hear from people as well. So if anybody has any ideas, feedback, thoughts, questions, book recommendations when they listen to this, feel free to ping me. I'm cal.patel@brightinsight.com. So it's cal.patel@brightinsight.com. And it's been an absolute pleasure. I've enjoyed the conversation here. So thank you guys for inviting me and making the time.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks again, Cal.
All right. Cheers. Take care, guys. See you, James. See you, Adam.